Welcome to Season 6 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we're continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest on the podcast is Patrick McEwen. Patrick is a world-renowned author and breathing practitioner who specializes in optimal breathing for health, well-being, and fitness. Originally trained in the famous Buteyko breathing method at the Buteyko Clinic in Moscow, Russia, Patrick has developed and refined his own method of performance breathing across his more than 20-year career. He currently has 8 books in publication, 2 of which are consistently in Amazon's top 10 bestsellers list, Close Your Mouth and Asthma Free Naturally. His latest book, Oxygen Advantage, is based on exercises for people seeking to improve their fitness and sports performance. This book has revolutionized the performance of thousands of athletes worldwide, and Patrick now has an expansive team of Oxygen Advantage instructors in virtually every country worldwide. You guys know how much value I place on breathwork in the performance arena, so I'm excited to get this episode out to you all. Let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Joining me today, we have a very special guest all the way from, whereabouts in Ireland are you, Patrick?
Galway, the West Coast. Yeah, nice and damp out here today now.
Yeah, I was going to pick you for Galway. I always, when I've listened to you on podcasts before and heard the accent, I have a few really close Irish friends. I bet he's from Galway. But without further ado, Patrick McEwen, everyone, he's a breathing specialist, performance coach, world-renowned author, and author of the famous Oxygen Advantage. So Patrick, thanks so much for taking the time to coming on.
Yeah, of course. Pleasure.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting episode. As we were talking about a little bit off air, this is something we at City Kickboxing, a lot of my athletes, we've integrated into our training. And as I was saying, there's not one athlete that has integrated the breath work into their training and come back with any negative feedback. So we'll get into all this. We'll get into the nitty gritty. But first question, I'm sure you get this all the time, but how did your journey in this start? Because it's not exactly a career path that you'd go to your university show and they say, you know what, be a breathing instructor.
Yeah, it's just, I suppose like many people who go down the path, it's a bit different. You go down it because of your own personal experience. And that's the biggest driver. And that was my personal experience. I was a kid growing up with like many kids with asthma and breathing problems. I had a stuffy nose. My sleep was really impacted. And my concentration in school was impacted. And also I was more likely to be in that fight or flight response. Like I remember when I came across breathwork in 1997, my resting heartbeat was 80 beats per minute. And I was in my early 20s. So I was, for years, I was in chronic hyperventilation and a mouth breather. And it had a major toll, but you never realize it when you're stuck in it. You know, you just get on with it, that's it. And I was fairly ambitious and I was driven and I pushed myself through school, pushed myself through university. I didn't like the experience, to be honest, which took a lot of work. And I read a newspaper article. It said two things. It said, breathe through your nose, and it said, breathe light. And I was doing neither of those. So I started practicing breathing through my nose. Sounds simple. I decongested my nose, holding my breath. I have a pretty screwed up nose anyway, but I was still able to, you know, to master breathing through it. I taped my mouth closed at night and I also wore breathe right strips to make sure that I woke up in the morning. And it was the second night I woke up, and after the second night's sleep with my mouth taped, and it was just unbelievable, the difference. And wheezing reduced by 50% in 1 week. You know, now I didn't embark down this route then. I trained in economics and social sciences and business end of it. And I was in the corporate world. And it was 2 years later, I was driving a car from Galway to Dublin. And I just got this gut feeling that I had to start teaching breathing. And it was intuitive, or just it felt the right thing to do. So that was it. That was it. End of story. And I trained in Russia, come back, and I've been teaching full-time almost 20 years now, since 2002.
Yeah, trust your gut. That gives that a new meaning. But we'll jump straight into it, Patrick. Can you give us a simple breakdown, as simple as you can, of the physiology of breathing?
Yeah, well, number one is, it's not about bringing more oxygen into the body. It's about utilizing the oxygen that you bring in. if you hyperventilate, or if I was to say to you, I want you to breathe in hard and breathe out hard, that's not going to increase oxygen uptake by the blood. Hemoglobin is already almost fully saturated with oxygen. If your hemoglobin is already almost fully saturated, you can't add more oxygen into the hemoglobin. If the glass is already full of water, you can pour as much water into the glass. It's not going to increase the water in the glass. The real key is, how do you get the red blood cells that carry oxygen? 98% of oxygen is carried bound by hemoglobin. How do you get the hemoglobin to release oxygen? That's the key. And for that, you need carbon dioxide. And for normal carbon dioxide, you need tolerance, a good tolerance to CO2. So the feeling of breathlessness during any physical exercise is driven by your sensitivity to the buildup of carbon dioxide. And if you have an individual who has a strong sensitivity to the buildup of carbon dioxide, it means that their breathing is harder and faster, and they're more likely to gas out too soon. Physical training does not change your breathing patterns. Severe physical training might, but it may not. It doesn't guarantee it. Your ventilatory response to carbon dioxide, how hard you breathe during physical exercise, is as a result of your everyday breathing patterns. If you have an athlete who is breathing through their mouth during sleep, they're 6 to 8 hours whereby they have their mouth open, they're breathing harder and faster, they're breathing upper chest, they're more likely to have shallow sleep. Not only is their sleep affected, but their mind is affected and their breathing is affected. And then you have an athlete who is, during rest, breathing a little bit faster and harder. That breathing pattern during rest is going to translate into disproportionate breathlessness during exercise. They're wasting energy unnecessarily. They're gassing out too soon. They're more likely to have respiratory muscle fatigue, but also muscle fatigue. Because if your breathing is inefficient and not economical, you're impacting the oxygen delivery to the working muscles. So you're more likely to go anaerobic. So, you know, it's really true, the breath, and I'm not talking about how breathing is taught by most instructors. And I'm not here just to, you know, say that I'm right and everybody else is wrong. No, it's not that. I'm talking about the basic physiology of it. Nobody should be teaching breathing unless they understand the basic physiology. It's not just about getting this idea and breathe harder and you get more oxygen in and you're getting rid of all that waste gas, carbon dioxide. That's nonsense. I'll give you an example. I was going, a different story, like I was going to do an exam. I was pretty anxious anyway, you know. Now, I didn't suffer from anxiety, but I would have had a racing mind, a lot of thoughts going through my head, living my head, stuck in my head, like a lot of people in my early 20s. And it was a fairly high-pressured exam. It was at university in Dublin. And 3 or 4 minutes before the exam, I wanted to take a walk to calm down. And I was told and heard of all of this, take full big breaths in order to calm down. So for 3 or 4 minutes, I took full big breaths. And I walked into the exam hall and I was totally spaced out and lightheaded. Now, what happened taking the full big breaths? I got rid of too much carbon dioxide from the blood through the lungs. And it was the loss of carbon dioxide that caused blood vessels to constrict and also reduced oxygen to my brain, reduced oxygen delivery to the brain. I always had cold hands and cold feet when I was a kid and a teenager. And, you know, it's something that you can kind of, you can remember little things. And that was because of impaired blood circulation, because of a faster and harder breathing pattern. It wasn't as if I was having a panic attack. It just meant that my breathing was a bit faster and a bit harder. So in terms of the breath, you know, there's a few different aspects to it. If you can improve your functional breathing patterns, you're less likely to gas out. You have more stamina. You've improved buffering capacity. You've got better focus because you can very much influence your state of mind through the breath. If you want to stress the body, hyperventilate. Breathe in fast and breathe out fast and in fast and out fast. That's a stressor. If you want to stress the body, breathe out and hold your breath and do a sprint while you hold your breath. That's a stressor. But if you want to influence your autonomic nervous system to downregulate for recovery and increased heart rate variability, breathe light, breathe slow, and breathe deep. And the thing about breathing deep is if you were to say to somebody, take a deep breath, the chances are that they will probably take a big breath. A deep breath is not a big breath. So when we think about breathing, there's three pillars to it. In functional breathing, there's the biochemistry, there's the biomechanics, and also resonance frequency breathing. Now, I know researchers don't focus on specifically those three pillars, but I do. If I'm working with any students and I want to improve and optimize their functional breathing patterns, I will focus on breathing light, breathing low, and breathing slow. But I'll also focus on their sleep and their breathing during sleep. And then we will do stressor exercises to push the body. And we can push the body by doing changing breathing and breath holds. We can push the body more intensively than a sprint, but there's less trauma. If you breathe in and out and hold your nose and go for a jog and keep jogging while you hold your breath until you feel a pretty strong air hunger, that's a stressor. That's disturbing the blood acid base. That's disturbing the blood gases. It's increasing carbon dioxide. It's lowering blood oxygen saturation. That's a much stronger effect than going for a sprint. So you think of athletes who are training hard to stimulate anaerobic glycolysis. If you sprint all out, maximum intensity with your mouth open, your blood oxygen saturation might drop down from normal of 97, 98% SpO2 down to about 93%. If you do a jog with your breath held, you can drop your blood oxygen saturation into the mid 80s, even into the 70s. And that's severe hypoxia. So we can create a stronger environment with less trauma by changing breathing patterns. And there's other aspects to it as well, Jordan, and I'll stop talking in a second, but willpower, because what we're doing is we're also putting the body into a state of discomfort. And there's a psychological training here because you have to relax into the stress. And you can imagine a fighter that's in a chokehold. And I understand, of course, that the carotid arteries, et cetera, will be constricted. But also, you don't want a fighter panicking due to the feeling of air hunger. So it's very important to, during training, is to generate that severe. Now, I'm not talking about extremes, nothing extremes. But I'm talking about a challenging feeling of air hunger. Training the brain to be able to cope with that from a psychological point of view, and also to be able to cope with breathlessness. And then you think of the player or an athlete going out. How do you upregulate before you get into the ring? How do you downregulate if you've got a minute's recovery between rounds? How can you get your breathing down quickly so that you can conserve energy? And there's all of these things that you can literally break down any game. You can break down to the training preseason, the training during season, even just right up to the night before, 5 minutes before the match, during the match, after the match for recovery. And it's about breathing. Once you understand it, you can bring it into your everyday life.
Yeah, there's a million and one different ways that we can go with this conversation, but I think focusing on it with athletes is going to be really powerful, because exactly what you just said there, it's a funny example for the guys listening to show how relevant this is. Anyone that follows our team, Kai Kara France, has been doing this training for a few months now, and he was actually in a UFC fight in a rear naked choke for about 3.5 minutes. And it was not just a scrambly rear naked, it was deep, and it was very deep. And Kai, after the fight, put up all these videos of him doing this breath work. And anyone who does jiu-jitsu, you know, if those carotid arteries, you're going to go. But it's the stress, like you said, it's, you know, your coaches always say, stay calm, stay calm. Kai ended up battling through, worked out of this almost impossible position. You could see how calm he was. You could see how calm and focused he was. Ended up getting up, got his rhythm. You could tell he wasn't overly drained either, got his rhythm back, and then finished the guy within 10 seconds of being on his feet, walked away with a performance bonus of the night. It was a do or die fight for him. He'd just come off 2 losses. And then that performance skyrocketed him into the top 3. And now he's on track for a world title shot. That's to give all the listeners just some context of how powerful this training, how relevant it can be. But Patrick, there is so many things we can talk about. I think something you said here as one of your pillars, the biochemistry, the resonance frequency breathing, but the biomechanics. And this is something that I found fascinating. Can you talk to us about the mechanics of breathing and how that affects all of the physiological functions you were just talking about?
Sure. Well, I suppose the biomechanics is just one aspect of it. Number one is that when you breathe in and out through your nose, you've got more optimal amplitude of the diaphragm. If you breathe through a mouth, you typically will engage more the upper chest. The diaphragm breathing muscle is not just for respiration. When you take a breath of air into the body, there is a signal sent from the brain to the diaphragm. The diaphragm is moving downwards. As the diaphragm moves downwards, there's a negative pressure in the chest, so that air comes into the lungs, but there's a positive pressure in the abdomen, intra-abdominal pressure. And it's the movement of the diaphragm that influences the generation of intra-abdominal pressure. And it's intra-abdominal pressure that's providing stabilization for the spine. If you think of a weightlifter, if you're going to lift a weight, you'll typically breathe in and hold your breath. The reason that you breathe in and hold your breath is as you breathe in, your diaphragm is moving downwards. And it's almost that the abdomen becomes like a pneumatic balloon. And it's providing that stabilization. But if you have an individual, and I've seen some MMA fighters, and you know, I've made comments on some of them and they've criticized me, but that's fine. Looking at their breathing during interviews, and these guys should be well able to handle an interview. And you watch their breathing, and I'm just watching their breathing, and I'm seeing this fast, relatively fast breathing, upper chest breathing, no natural pauses between breaths, a relatively large tidal volume. And I said, this guy isn't breathing good. This guy is going to gas out too soon. That form of breathing is pretty common with all people in the population. And I would say of a normal population, it's about 20% of the population. But with a person with anxiety or panic disorder, it can increase to 80%. With a person with asthma, it can be about 30%. It can also be present in people with perfectionist tendencies, and I can imagine that athletes are going to fall into this. Now, coming back to that, so this athlete that I'm watching an interview, and he's breathing faster and a little bit upper chest, more so than what he should be for sitting down. And then I'm thinking, well, this guy is breathing more using the upper chest. He's not going to be generating optimal IAP. So because of his dysfunctional breathing patterns, he's more prone to dysfunctional movement. You cannot have functional movement without functional breathing. It's not just about training the core. The core is not the abs specifically. We have to think of a box. You've got the diaphragm is the roof. You've got the pelvic floor. You've got the abs to the front. You've got the spinal muscles to the back. Optimal breathing with normal movement of the inhalation, sorry, with the diaphragm. So during inhalation, the diaphragm is moving down, but also during exhalation for the diaphragm to move back up to its resting position. And it's the diaphragm moving back up to its resting position that influences the zone of apposition, which in turn is influencing the generation of IAP, which in turn then is influencing functional movement. Athletes with dysfunctional movement are more prone to injury. So here we have breathing, and now you can take it that how you breathe is going to affect how you move, but also prone to your injury. Now, the same athletes, you'll see them, Jordan, you know, really pay attention to the guys who are struggling, the guys who are plateauing, and the guys who they're gassing out too soon. After a couple of rounds, they just lose stamina. And if you see the legs going from under somebody, that can be a sign of respiratory muscle fatigue, because what happens is if the diaphragm isn't trained adequately, when the diaphragm gets tired, blood is stolen from the legs to feed the diaphragm. The body is going to sacrifice other functions in order to maintain breathing. Breathing is one of those functions that's absolutely vital for life. And the brain is going to prioritize breathing over other functions. Other functions get sacrificed. So if the diaphragm gets tired, the brain doesn't care about the legs, but blood is going to be stolen from the legs to feed the diaphragm. Now, saying to an athlete, if you're in a chokehold, stay calm. If an athlete is reacting physiologically to the air hunger, it generates panic. Why not train the athlete to be able to deal physiologically with that air hunger? And you can do that by simply bringing in breath holds in training. So for example, if somebody was warming up, why not do your warm up with your mouth closed? Yeah, you're adding a small load onto your breathing. This in turn is helping to increase diaphragmatic strength. This is helping to achieve optimal movement of the diaphragm. But also when you train with your mouth closed, especially during low to moderate intensity, carbon dioxide increases in the blood, you reduce your tolerance to CO2, you've got a reduced ventilatory response to CO2. Now you can go one step further. Why not do the pads with breath holds? You know, we have special forces and they simulate, they go into challenging environments as part of their training. And the whole objective is that they have total composure in a stressful situation. That's what their training is for. These guys are the guys and girls who are able to go into the most dangerous situations and to make decisions, split second decisions, and hopefully the right ones. But the instructors are bringing in breath holds to stress the officers going into these situations in simulation so that they can cope better with them when it's going into a real event. So, you know, just a couple of ideas, but yeah, you can really bring breathing exercises into wherever it is.
That's a good segue into this question I wanted to ask you, Patrick, is say a lot of the athletes we work with, say professional athletes, and they've got full-time training loads. They're, you know, doing anywhere between 10 and 12 training sessions, plus they're factoring recovery. They're doing other sessions as well. How do you factor in, say, the breath hold training? I know you said you could put it in at the start.
Yeah, of course. We don't change anything. Like if I have an athlete preparing for competition, I would typically have them do low and slow breathing initially because I want to calm the mind. You want a certain amount of nerves, but you don't want to go out too anxious because that's going to screw everything up. So we want to achieve flow states. And a flow state is a balance between state of relaxation and alertness at the same time. So during the warm-up, we bring in functional breathing to bring a calmness to the mind. We breathe light, so you have increased air hunger. We breathe slow, we reduce the respiratory rate as a calming effect. And we also breathe with lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs. So during the warm-up, the athlete is whatever warming up, it doesn't matter what they are doing. They bring in functional breathing into their warm-up. And then as they continue to warm up, they have their mouth closed and we do a couple of easy breath holds. They take a normal breath in and out through the nose and pinch the nose or just hold their breath. And they will hold their breath until they feel a moderate air hunger. And there, a minute later, they hold their breath again for moderate air hunger. And then a minute later, as they're getting nice and warmed up, we have them breathe in and out through their nose, hold their breath, and go from low intensity to moderate intensity to high intensity while holding the breath and stress them. And then let go, get your breathing under control. A minute later, repeat it and repeat it 5 times. And the reason that we do this before going into the ring, we do it typically to finish it about 2 minutes or so before a fight, 3 minutes even. By then, CO2 levels have recovered, so acidosis has reduced. But it's getting not just a state of mind, but also increasing blood flow to the brain. So initially, we relax the individual. We're bringing them into more present moment awareness with functional breathing, etc. And then we do 2 easy breath holds to prepare them for the stronger breath holds. Stronger breath holds increase blood flow to the brain, increase carbon dioxide, open up the nose, open up the lungs, add an extra load onto the breathing muscles, but also cause the spleen to contract. The spleen is your blood bank, contains 8% of your red blood cells. When you do a long breath hold, even if it's just over 30 seconds, your spleen releases red blood cells into circulation. You now have improved oxygen carrying capacity, which lasts for about between 10 and 60 minutes. We don't know exactly how long it lasts for. One study which suggested or showed or reported that it was 60 minutes, and more recently it's down to 10 minutes. So there's a little bit of discrepancy there. But a spleen contraction is a very normal thing when a human being holds their breath. Now, you think then of an athlete going into a fight with increased oxygen carrying capacity, increased ability to carry oxygen. That in turn is influencing VO2 max. But it's not about just... Say, for example, if you have an individual then who is doing breath holds as part of their warm-up during everyday training, even if they were just to do this, just focus in on this. Every time they do a warm-up during their normal training, repeat the pattern because you don't want to introduce something on the day of a fight, but you're getting used to it during your normal everyday training. That in turn then will also synthesize erythropoietin or EPO. EPO is a natural hormone that's secreted or released by the kidneys and the liver to a lesser extent when we do breath holding. And EPO sends a message then to the bone marrow, which matures red blood cells. And this, for example, is why athletes dope. But you can naturally dope by doing breath holding. But not only are you doing, when you're doing intermittent hypoxic So we are dropping the blood oxygen saturation to get the increased EPO. That's a longer effect. So that's something that you would need to be doing all the time. And I'm only talking about doing, say, 5-6 repetitions a day. It wouldn't take any time from you. Now, it's a bit challenging at start. And if people have anxiety, it's important that they relax into it. Because again, it's giving them a dose of a feeling of suffocation. If somebody comes into me, I want to expose them to suffocation. Aren't you better off exposing them to suffocation during their training than waiting for them to experience it in the ring? And again, that's just, you know, an idea of how you can bring it in. Now, following training then, or even during training, during low to moderate intensity, why not just have nasal breathing? Okay, some of the athletes will have deviated septum because of blows to the nose. You could, well, you during training without sparring, you could use nasal dilators. So if you're on the pads, if you're on the bags, whatever training you're doing, once it's not sparring, once it's not contact, you could use a little plastic device. We use nasal dilators to help open up the nose. We also train with sports mask. So, you know, it's a device, you've seen it. It came originally from MMA. I think it was Gracie who was starting it first. They were using something around their mouth and drilling holes into it. And then training mask came on. And then we developed our own one. So we use it in tandem with breathing exercises. So we get the athletes. It's just about adding an extra load on to cause the body to make those conditions, changes. Now, one of those conditions is improved tolerance to carbon dioxide buildup. That happens with nose breathing. Because if you go for a jog or even moderate to high intensity with your mouth closed, it's a pretty tough feeling of suffocation. But what you are doing there is you're breathing less air because your nose is a smaller entry to the body than the mouth. And as you're breathing less air, carbon dioxide accumulates in the blood. So you're exposing your body to higher carbon dioxide to train the body to be able to cope with the CO2 buildup. That's a very positive adaptation. Now, when we go one step further then by doing breath holds, we are dropping the blood oxygen saturation as well as increasing carbon dioxide. This in turn, that there's reduced oxygen getting to the muscle. And as a result then, it's likely that what's happening is that the buffering capacity inside the muscle compartment is improving. So there's proteins, there's phosphates, and bicarbonate to a lesser extent inside the muscle, which the purpose is, or the function is, to bind with hydrogen ion in order to delay the onset of lactic acid and fatigue. So you can improve your buffering capacity to delay lactic acid. So that's another aspect from an anaerobic point of view. And yeah, so I suppose, you know, that's, I suppose looking at it that way, yeah, a few different applications.
Hey guys, a quick interruption of the podcast to tell you about a special offer for my new brand, TrainAid. As you guys know, we released TrainAid Hydration at the beginning of this year. It's been a project close to my heart that I've been working on for the past 18 months, and in the 6 months that it has been live to the public, it has helped thousands of athletes and everyday warriors alike stay on top of their hydration and get the most out of themselves. If you are interested in seeing what all the fuss is about, head to www.trainaid.com and enter FUEL10 at checkout for a 10% discount. Okay, back to the show.
Patrick, is it an ideal time frame? I'll say fighter specifically, because you've worked with a big staple of them, and that's a majority of our listeners, say, to integrate the breathing exercises out from competition. Is there like an ideal time frame, say 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, do it, you know, once daily for that amount of time? Is there an ideal time, or is it just an arbitrary number?
Even if you did it for 2 weeks, you'd have gains. This is not going to disrupt your existing training. You can still, I'm not saying switch to mouth breathing. I'm not saying switch to nasal breathing 100%. What I'm saying is at different pockets, add an extra load on to get those adaptations. So it's not going to cause you to decondition. When you want to push yourself with your mouth open, you go do that. So most people think, oh my God, I couldn't introduce this because it's going to set me back. No, you don't have to do it that way. You can pick parts of your training whereby you can sustain nasal breathing and bring in some breath holds, even if you're on the pads or whatever. And, you know, 2 weeks of practice would be beneficial. Now, would I say, though, to an athlete, wait until 2 weeks before the game? No, I'd say start bringing it into your everyday life. Because even think of the brain, think of the mind. you need to have absolute focus and concentration in a ring. You need to have that undivided attention whereby your attention is absolutely focused on what you are doing to the exclusion of all distractions. And even if the opponent, if he says something, you can put it aside. You're driven. How can you train the brain to be so focused? You train the brain by following the breath. And you can use your breath. And this is not just, okay, for the guys with the sandals, with open leather sandals and all of the beads and all of that nonsense and image. It's none of that. It's about training your brain to be absolutely holding its attention. If you think about concentration is our capacity to narrow our attention to one thing without distraction. And our attention span is the length of time that we can hold our attention on one thing. It's important, of course, to train the body. It's important to train breathing. It's also important to train the brain, because all you need is one distracting thought. And if that thought, if the athlete is dwelling on that thought, that's game over. So how do you train the brain? You will not do it unless you have good sleep. You cannot do it unless you have deep sleep. And I would say that 50% of athletes are sleeping with their mouths open during sleep. That's not good. If you're waking up with a dry mouth in the morning, you're more likely to spend greater time in shallow sleep and not enough time in deep sleep. You're more likely to have sleep fragmentation whereby you have to get up to go to the bathroom during the middle of the night. You never should be getting up to go to the bathroom during the middle of the night. If you're getting up to go to the bathroom during the middle of the night, your sleep has been disrupted. You want to have that solid sleep. And nasal breathing is the key there. Taping of the mouth, absolutely vital, especially when somebody has their mouth open. So let's start off with deep sleep. Then bring in, I call it invincible breathing. You're bringing in the pillars from a biochemical point of view to open up, improve blood flow, oxygen delivery. That has a calming effect on the central nervous system. Breathing low, calming effect on the central nervous system. Breathing slow, calming effect. So we can stimulate the vagus nerve, which is wandering throughout the body, to secrete a neurotransmitter acetylcholine to cause a slowing of the heart for heart rate recovery. So even post-training, how do you get your heart rate down quickly? Use your breath, not just from a physiological point of view, but also from a psychological point of view. Now, whenever the mind wanders off, you bring your attention back onto your breathing. It's about training the brain not to be stuck in your head. Many people are stuck in their head, and mobile phones and social media, there's so many distractions now. And I would say that people are stuck in their heads now more. If you think of the pressures of a fighter, they don't just have the pressure associated with being in the ring. They have everybody contacting them via Instagram and via all of this crap and nonsense that occupies time. Forget about Instagram. Forget about all of the nonsense that's causing you to be distracted. Only focus on your capacity and your performance in the ring and put everything else aside. And instead of wasting time looking into your phone, focus on your breathing and bring your attention internally. When you walk into that ring, you walk into that ring with every cell of your body, every cell dispersed throughout the body. You're fighting with every cell of your body. You're not just fighting with your head. And also, maintaining nasal breathing can help with visuospatial awareness. This means that you're not only, you're watching everything, that you're fully there. And in terms of, because the brain is very much connected with, sorry, the nose is very much connected with the brain. The mouth isn't. Now, I know I'm going a little bit off topic here, but if you were to look at the functions of the mouth when it comes to breathing, is there one function implied by the mouth when it comes to breathing? And the answer is no. The mouth is a hole. That's all it is. When you breathe through the mouth, it's a hole. Air comes straight down into your throat, into your lungs. There's nothing done with that air. And also, mouth breathing is more likely to put us into chest breathing, faster breathing, fight or flight. So, you know, again, it comes back to it. But I would really say to athletes, this is not just breathing in a ring. This is your, not just your breathing, but this also is your mental focus. And to train the brain, you bring this outside the ring. Even if you were washing dishes, Can you wash dishes with your attention, taking your attention into the body, and wash the dishes with every cell of your body, as opposed to being in the head? And if athletes have any tendency towards a little bit of anxiety, genetically influenced, of course, or panic disorder, use this training, because it won't just help you in the ring, but it will help you for life. 25 years ago, I was very fortunate to learn not just to learn how to think, because our education system teaches us how to think. It's not enough. It's not enough just to train somebody how to think. You need to train them how to stop thinking. You need to train them how to have control over the mind. And society demands that we have control over the mind. Nobody is teaching us how. It's not about mindfulness. Mindfulness is good. It's not enough. Mindfulness will not work for the very people who need it the most. You need to have deep sleep. If you have a lousy sleep, your mind is going to be agitated. You're not going to be in a good mood. Most of us will have pretty good sleep, but the odd time you'll wake up and you have a lousy sleep. And it's like waking up with a hangover, even though you haven't drank alcohol. How on earth can be how can we be calm with poor sleep? And poor breathing. If you're breathing faster in upper chest breathing, irregular breathing, if you've got a low Bolt score, and a low Bolt score is a good screening tool to determine whether you've got functional breathing or dysfunctional breathing. And I'll explain the Bolt score. The Bolt score is you take it while sitting. So you're sitting down for about 5 minutes. Don't care what you get. You take a number of breaths in through your nose and out through your nose, and you pinch your nose with your fingers, and you time it in seconds until you feel the first definite desire to breathe. And when you feel the first definite desire to breathe, or the first involuntary movement of your breathing muscles, let go and breathe, and your breathing should be fairly normal. If your Bolt score is above 25 seconds, there is an 89% chance that dysfunctional breathing is not present. If your Bolt score is less than 25 seconds, there is a good chance, it is a good indicator that dysfunctional breathing is present. And if dysfunctional breathing is present, think of the impact on the mind, your breathing, your movement, and also your physical ability in terms of gassing out. So I would start with athletes. You know, we do two tests. I do the Bolt score with them, but I also observe their breathing. How are they breathing? Normally with the Bolt score, we have an idea of how the person is breathing, but I want to see that their Bolt score is matching how they are breathing. And then I also do the maximum breathlessness test. And this is not to be done if the female is pregnant or if anybody has any serious medical conditions. And even with panic and anxiety, I'd say go easy enough with this one. You're much better off for pregnancy. Don't do any of the exercises, full stop. But if you have anxiety and panic disorder, go easy with the breath holds, because you're much better off acclimatizing to the air hunger, as opposed to just putting yourself into a strong air hunger. If you put yourself into too strong an air hunger, it can generate panic. I've put people into panic attacks, and I put one guy, I was giving him exercises at 10 o'clock of a Saturday morning, going back a few years ago, 4 o'clock that day, he admitted himself to accident and emergency. You know, the breath is pretty powerful. That's why you don't want to mess around with it either, especially with the more stronger stuff. And you can't just say to people, do breath holds. Breath holds are not suitable for everybody. Some people, they need to be tailored to that person. They may have an existing health condition. They may have anxiety, panic disorder, asthma. They may have a low Bolt score. You know, it is about tailoring it to the individuals. For somebody just to say, blanket, go do this, it's not good, because there will be many people it will suit, but there will be some people it won't suit. So the maximum breathlessness test, for those of you who have, you're pretty fit, you're pretty young, you're good and healthy, take a normal breath in through your nose and out through your nose and pinch your nose, and walk as many paces as you can, but count the number of paces that you can hold your breath for as you walk. And you're holding your breath for a maximum, and then let go, but breathe in through your nose. Your goal is to achieve a maximum breathlessness score of 80 paces. Now, your Bolt score, ideally, it's minimum of 25 seconds. But for somebody who is fighting professionally, we would love to get them up to 40 seconds. So even if some athletes will come in and they have pretty good breathing, 26, 27 seconds, but we want to get them up to 40 seconds. Now, I've seen some fighters with a Bolt score of 12 seconds. And I know it's difficult to believe, but there's no way on earth would I get into a ring with a Bolt score of 12 seconds. Well, I wouldn't get into a ring anyway, but definitely not with a Bolt score of 12 seconds.
That's a good segue, Patrick, because as you said, especially that last part, I've had this conversation with guys in the gym and I've seen it time and time again where myself and others are preaching this. So you've got to go do this, go do this. And they go, I don't need to do this. I'm super fit as it is. I'm super fit. And yeah. You watch them. And then I see them say on an assault bike and they're going. And even from the get-go, they look like a dog's panty and they're just going. How is that possible? How are these guys, can they be super fit but still have terrible breathing mechanics?
They're super fit, but they're pushing their body to the limits and it's not efficient and it's not economical. You know, like there's two different things here. There's really about optimizing where you're at and your physical fitness. And I would say that breathing is very much influencing your physical fitness more than your physical fitness is influencing your breathing. So those same guys, they're likely to maybe plateau. They might be fine for a while to get by, but plateau, gassing out too soon, more prone to burnout. I've interviewed a lot of athletes over the last couple of years, and the amount of athletes who have experienced burnout and high stress levels, and they had to stop. And I'm talking about world-class athletes, and ranging from last week was an Ironman, world-class competitor in Ironman, holding Swedish world record for something like 8 or 9 years. Before that was a top class, the top 10 the world tennis player, and again, burnout. And when we talk with military as well, burnout is a factor. The human body can take so much, but if you push it that bit too far, the human body is going to give in. And one way of giving in is by shut you down, that you have no other choice but. And the chap last week that we were talking to, 6 months in bed, for a guy who could do 75 miles at a top level, and to the point he pushed himself so hard that the body gave in. He had adrenal fatigue and he was 6 months recuperating in bed. Now to go from one extreme to the other. So it's about optimizing what you have. You may be a brilliant and an excellent athlete, but if you've got poor breathing, something is holding you back. You know, try it. Like, it's just that breathing Jordan has a bad rap. It really, really has. And it's unfortunate. It's time to take breathing from the left of field and to bring it into mainstream. That's where it's at. And if I'm working with athletes, you know, I'll give them a workout with breathing. They will know well when they're finished with it. They won't be under any illusions. And I'll push them and I'll show them and experience it. And you know what? Some people are open to it and some people who aren't. They're not open to it, that's fine. Eventually the penny drops. I learned 20 years ago that not everybody is into this. And I don't tend to waste my energy trying to convince anybody. That's been honest with you. But if somebody is open to it and they want to know more, we are happy to give them the information and to put them through the processes. You know, so I suppose it's like everything else. And I can understand it from an athlete's point of view, because you've got a pressure that you have to have this right, you have to have that right, you have to have this right. And they're thinking, oh my God, one more thing. But if you just understand that one more thing, or at least just pay attention to your breathing and just ask yourself the question, are you gassing out too soon? When you're sitting at rest, is your breathing a little bit faster in upper chest? Do you have disrupted sleep? Do you have agitation of the mind? Do you find that you are living in your head? Do you find that, you know, your legs are going out from under you? Do you have the stamina to last the rounds? Those are the questions that you ask yourself. And a little bit of self-awareness. And self-awareness is very important anyway, because when you identify what's going wrong, then, you know, you've got a little bit more of a drive then to try and fix it.
That was going to be one of my questions, Patrick, when we were talking about the Bolt score. And you were saying you know, breath holding isn't for everyone. And I was going to say, are there other measures that you can use, say, alongside or alternatively to the BOLT score to measure the CO2 adaptations? Are these the ones you're talking about? You can just measure, say, the gassing out, the disrupted sleep, the jelly legs, et cetera.
That would be it, you know. It, like if you're training, say you've two sparring partners, and we'll say they're about the same age, and we'll say they're two males or two females, and they've pretty much at a similar level. Is one guy gassing out sooner than the other? Because sometimes that's when you start to realize something is not right here. This guy here is doing the same training as I'm doing, but I'm the one that feels more breathless. It could be that your breathing is holding you back. So little things like that. And I think people kind of get it, you know. I think people do. They know that something is not quite right, but they haven't quite put their finger on it. And the reason being is, Jordan, because breathing has been overlooked. Like, you're working with professional athletes. Okay, your gym is different, that these guys know about breathing. If I look at Premiership football, okay, here are guys that are paid millions. They don't have anybody talking about breathing. I can absolutely assure you, they don't know the first thing that it comes to about breathing. Here are guys that are paid millions to perform, and yet breathing is overlooked for a while. Watch this space.
Yeah, it's a conversation we always have. And I've had this a couple of times is when we're talking about the future of performance. And it's one thing that I very much believe is going to be the most fundamental aspect of the future of the high performing athlete is going to be their breath and their breath work and how they breathe. But Patrick, one thing I did want to ask you, and I guess speaking of going into the future, now 2021, we're starting to discover a lot more, we've known it for a long time. The research is catching up, the difference between males and females, and especially with what I do in nutrition, it's massive. And anyone that does it, you might not be able to find a lot of stuff in the research, but if you do it, if you work with males and females, you know it's chalk and cheese. They're different entities. Is this similar with breath work? Have you found this in your own practice?
Very much. I wrote a book called The Breathing Cure. And, you know, you see it. It's a pretty big book. It's 190,000 words. There's two chapters in it for females. This is not new information. For breathing, it's been around since 1905. So you think of the monthly cycle. So say, for instance, post-ovulation, days 10 to days 22, this is the mid-luteal to mid-follicular phase. There's an increase in progesterone and estrogen, and progesterone is a respiratory stimulant. So it stimulates breathing, it stimulates respiration. So respiration then is likely to go faster. Now, what can happen here is the carbon dioxide levels can drop in the female, depending on the female. Carbon dioxide levels can drop by as much as 25%. This increases pain perception and it reduces pain thresholds, but it can also initiate a feeling of anxiety and panic and fatigue. So this the female then, and I know, but there has been some studies looking at females and their performance at different times of the monthly cycle. And there are studies that are showing that it doesn't change. But when you talk to females on the ground, the changes during the monthly cycle can influence performance. Now, again, this is not going to affect every female the same, just that's the way it is. It's the same with not everybody has poor breathing patterns. But if you have a female with relatively poor breathing patterns, and then she goes through days 10 to days 22, she will have a deterioration in her breathing. And the feeling of air hunger, the feeling of a little bit of suffocation, you know, and that's going to impact her performance, and especially with the mind as well. The other aspect when it comes to female breathing is that female breathing, the airways are different than men. Men have wider airways. So for a man, if a man is doing a sprint and you're thinking about, you know, a fight, there's less turbulence to airflow. But with the female, because the airways are smaller, there's more turbulence. So it takes more work for the female to breathe than it does the man. So females too are more prone to panic anxiety, panic disorder, and more prone to, in the literature, even though I haven't really seen it, I have to say, like, we do get more females coming into us than men, but I just think that men haven't necessarily bought into breathing yet. Now, it's changed with the oxygen advantage. We get about, It could be, yeah, it's about 50-50 with, it could even be more actually with the oxygen advantage because it's more kind of performance driven. But in the years before that, I was always getting more women coming in. And I thought it was just, you know, women will tend to go to yoga, for example, and they associate maybe yoga with breathing, so that they'll come along. But in the literature, it is as much as twice as many females have breathing pattern disorders as men, two times. So yeah, it could be something to watch out for females. And then post-menopause, a different story again, because hormonal levels now are leveling out and progesterone drops, but now the female can be more prone to sleep disorder breathing. That can increase 200 to 300%. So when we're looking at breathing, we're looking at sleep, we're looking at the mind, we're looking at respiration, and then we're looking at performance. So there's a number of different aspects to it. But yeah, I think for the female, track your BOLT score during the monthly cycle and just see, does it dip? You know, do you feel that your breathing is a little bit more difficult mid-luteal to mid-follicular phase?
Yeah, that's excellent. It is. Like you said, it may not be that performance thing. This is a conversation that we have all the time. Because especially the athletes we work with, if you're going to do fighting, you're tough. You're inherently tough. Going to be a tough person, right? So
yes.
Even during those cycles, if you're experiencing premenstrual symptoms, the girls I work with are going to tough it out. They're going to tough it out anyway. My rationale with them is to get them in the breathing is you're going to tough it out. And that's mental energy that you have to contribute to doing that. So if you can do that and use less of that mental energy and put it elsewhere, yes, maybe your performance will stay flat, stay the same the whole time through, but you'll have more mental energy to put elsewhere. So
no, it'll actually increase because if you improve your breathing patterns for PMS, you're also improving your breathing patterns for all the time. You know, it's not just how you're breathing during PMS, but it's your breathing in the early stages of the monthly cycle too. It's about increasing your BOLT score, increase your maximum breathlessness test, you know, get your mouth closed, learn to breathe with improved strength of the diaphragm. You know, I suppose I'm going to make this point as well, Jordan. Breathing instructors are often trained according to tradition. And my background was I was trained according to the Russian doctor Buteyko. That was my background, my training back 20 years ago. And for many years, I stuck rigidly to his tradition. And I was Buteyko. And we still do Buteyko. And many other instructors are the same. They have their guru, and their guru teaches them this is how to do it. And you don't deviate outside of that because maybe people feel that they would be betraying their guru, you know. And yoga is the same, the guru. With Oxygen Advantage, I started that off in 2013, and I started off primarily because I was giving courses for mindfulness and Buteyko, bringing it together between 2010 and 2013, because there was a lot of anxiety in Ireland post-economic crash, a lot of suffering as a result of politicians and banks, and I won't even go there. But 90% of the people who came in were female at that point. We were getting so few males. And I kept on thinking to myself, males were dying by suicide. And yet they wouldn't come in to do a breathing practice. And I say, we have to change this. So when I started off with the Oxygen Advantage was high performance. And that's when we started getting the males in. And that's why I said my comment earlier that, yeah, it's definitely 50%, but it could even be 60% males. And because, you know, that aspect of it is also, it's very important. But coming back to tradition has held back breathing. And with Oxygen Advantage, I wasn't constrained by tradition because there was no tradition. And as a result, we now have 26 different exercises, targeting and tailored to different states, different people, different effects. And the toolbox is much bigger than it would have been. Because, you know, and the common question here is people ask me, well, what about the Wim Hof method versus the Oxygen Advantage method? And it always comes up. The Wim Hof method is a great method. It's a stressor. That's what it is. You hyperventilate, you hold your breath, your blood oxygen saturation drops pretty low. It's a stressor and it causes adaptations. At the same time, if you think of your physical training, you don't want to just stress the body, but you want to recover as well. So for instance, now we do hyperventilation and we do breath holding, but we do recovery. It's always very important, if you are doing the Wim Hof method, which is great, recover afterwards. You don't want your blood pH, you know, it's not about keeping your blood pH too high. It's all about homeostasis. Because if, for example, and I also say to you is, we have seen different effects with people practicing the Wim Hof method, depending on their Bolt score. When people have a Bolt score above 25 seconds, the Wim Hof method seems to help them more. But when their Bolt score, and I'm talking about here that they don't have a strong sensitivity to carbon dioxide buildup, with the individuals with a Bolt score less than 25 seconds, what the Wim Hof method, the reports that we have coming in, I have to be very careful because sometimes when I mention anything about the Wim Hof method, people are critical of me. I'm not here, I'm not criticizing the method. All I'm saying is I'm exploring breathing. What happens when you hyperventilate and your breath hold? If you have a poor baseline, that's all the question is. And that could increase your sensitivity to carbon dioxide. You don't want that to happen. You want to have reduced sensitivity to carbon dioxide. You want to have a reduced ventilatory response to carbon dioxide. If you're doing physical exercise, you want your body to be able to cope with a drop to oxygen and with an increase of carbon dioxide. And that's what we're looking to train as well. So, you know, it's not just about the biomechanics. If you go to your local instructor down the street, they could be focusing mainly on the diaphragm. But in the process of focusing on the diaphragm, they're telling the person to take full big breaths in and out of their mouth. That's sacrificing the biochemistry. It's the balance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure we could go on for hours and hours, but I'm very, very mindful of your time. Very last thing I want to ask you though, Patrick, because my mind is racing a million miles an hour. And I know the guys, my audience, especially whenever we do anything about breathing, I know their minds will be racing a million miles an hour. Say that person who we were talking about earlier in the gym that goes, I don't need to breathe and I'm fit as it is. They listen to this and they go, you know what? I'm going to give it a go, but I just don't know how. I don't know where to start. What would you say? What would be your advice?
Well, first of all, what I would say is number one is get your mouth closed during sleep. And it's something so simple. You know, we have a tape that we use, myotape, but there's other tapes in the market. The tape that we use surrounds the mouth. So you stretch it like this. It's elasticated tape. So this kind of takes any apprehension away. And it brings the lips together because it's elasticated. So there's a pull. But you could use 3M 1-inch micropore tape. So don't use masking tape or anything like that because you don't know what the chemicals are. Get your mouth closed during sleep. That's number one. Number two, do your warm up with your mouth closed and bring in a couple of breath holds if you're relatively fit and healthy and you're not pregnant. Number three, when you're on the pads, don't be just there with your mouth open. And also, I have heard it said that if you get a strike to the jaw, if your mouth is open, it's totally different than with the mouth closed. So that you're better able to withstand the impact with your mouth closed. The more you can breathe through your nose, even with the higher intensity. But of course, I'm not saying go in and do a sprint now with your mouth closed because it's going to be too challenging and too suffocating. But start doing it, building up your ability to cope with that air hunger. The air hunger diminishes in about three or four weeks with a professional athlete because they are training so much. For a normal person, it's a bit longer. It's going to be about 6 weeks or so. But when that air hunger is diminishing for a given level and intensity of physical exercise, you know that you are becoming more efficient. We have to think that, you know, think of a car and think of a high-performance car. But think of a high-performance car who is efficient, which is efficient with fuel versus a guzzler. So we want to be efficient with the fuel that we are taking in. For a given amount of breath, what can you do with that? You know, think of the person who is walking down the street and they are so breathless. All they are doing is walking and they are breathless. You know, so that obviously that kind of makes sense to that person. They're not in a good state of health. With an athlete as well, we have to ask the question, what can they do for a given level of breath? And you can determine that by measuring your Bolt score. Measure your Bolt score. Do the maximum breathlessness test. If you have any tendency towards nasal obstruction, hay fever, sensitivity to dust mites or any stuffy nose, that's going to impact your sleep. If you have a deviated septum to the point that it's causing you to breathe through your mouth at night, you are 2 to 3 times more likely to have a sleep problem. So if you're mouth breathing, it's more likely then to cause agitation of the mind because it can change brain cell excitability. And as a result, that can then influence your focus. Like people talk about flow states. Like one person who is very much a researcher and well-renowned, world-renowned in flow, and I sent him a question through his assistant. Can you achieve flow states if you have lousy sleep and lousy breathing? I don't think it's possible. So if you want to achieve flow states, let's get the basics right. And of course, nutrition is going to be tying in there, etc. You know, if you're feeling lousy, how on earth can you be in flow state? And flow state is where it is, but it's not just about that either. So yeah, I'd say it's just become more aware. Start bringing it in, you know. If you want, there's some exercise, I think, up on our website as well. And maybe look to our social media channel, even though I have to say I don't look at Instagram myself. I'm fortunate enough. I have somebody who does it for me. I hate the stuff. And don't waste your time on Instagram either, I suppose. So just look at it sparingly to get some information, but then give yourself attention. Don't surrender your attention to these large multinational corporates, because that's all they want is your attention. You know, give it to yourself. You deserve it. They'll probably ban me now after that comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe I'll have to talk to my social media guy and see what it's about. But Patrick, I'll let you go there. Just very last thing, if someone does want to get in contact with you, is there an email that they can reach you? And I guess a good logical question from here, if someone wants to get involved with the Oxygen Advantage, become an instructor, learn more about it, how do they do that?
Yeah, like we've trainings in Australia all the time. We've trainings internationally. We have 2 master instructors, Johannes and Dean Gladstone. So there's trainings all the time, you know, every 6 or 8 weeks, I suppose. And we've trainings online. So the oxygen, it's not there. It's the website is oxygenadvantage.com. And my email address is patrick@oxygenadvantage.com. Now, the only thing is I get about 100 to 200 emails a day. I don't always get through them. So because I'm trying to focus on, you know, my own. And it is about monitoring distractions. And I just find that emails can be quite a distraction. And yeah, it's like everything else. We have to choose. If we want to achieve something, we have to be able to focus our attention on what we want to achieve and put everything else aside. So you can chance me by email. But hopefully you might get a reply.
Oh, well, I appreciate you getting back to my email. I've actually started doing something new where I'll only check my email at the very end of the business day every 2 days. So if anyone's listening and I haven't replied to your email, that is why. I'll check them after this. But Patrick, thanks so much for taking the time, man. I know you're super busy, but I myself really appreciate coming on. I'm sure all of our listeners really do as well. So thank you, mate.
Good stuff. Thanks very much, Jordan.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Patrick is a world leader when it comes to integrating breathwork to improve mental focus, aptitude, health, fitness, and performance. And I could not encourage you guys more to read his books, my personal favorites being Close Your Mouth, and of course, the famous Oxygen Advantage. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.